Every one of us leaves a mark in life. Every one of us. My question today is, what kind of mark will you leave? In that context, you know, the older I get, the more I find myself thinking about the hereafter. In fact, it was just last week, I went down to the basement to get some things, and I walked down the stairs, and I went in the room, and I had to ask myself, what am I here after? It's true, though, the more I get older, the more I think about the hereafter. The other day, I was driving down Broadwater by the cemetery, and it looked like a park-like setting. It looked really inviting, and nice people were in there, so I kind of went in there, looked around. There were thousands of graves there, and I thought about it for a moment. All of those people, thousands of them, all had lives just like me and you. Every one of them had passions and hopes and dreams and tragedies that affected them like we have in our lives, all of them. And each grave had what's called a marker. Some of them had granite stones, very elaborate and pretty, and others just brass plates. But I learned something there that was a great truth, and it's this. The dash is important. That's right, the dash. Every grave had one thing in common. Each one had the name of the individual that was buried there. Then under it, they would have a date they were born, and then they had a dash, and then they had the date that they died. Here lies Mary Smith, 1929, dash, 1997. It's then when it came to me, what's really important while we're still alive, it's that dash. It's the dash that's really important. It's a mark. And that dash, if you will, represents the life we live while we're here on this earth. For this reason, Ecclesiastes 7 says this, a good name, in verse 1, is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. And then he says it's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that's the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. And so he's saying it's better to go to a cemetery than to go have a feast. And why? Because we'll consider our end, and so that we'll think about it, and so we'll strive to leave a good mark in life. It's a good motivator, isn't it? You know, we want to make life easier for ourselves in this life, or do we want to lead a life that sometimes takes sacrifice and therefore leaves a mark in other people's lives? You see, the more that we consider our end, the more we'll want to improve, the more we'll consider leaving that kind of mark, leaving a mark in people's lives, a mark where we contributed, a mark where we gave of ourselves to others. You know, you can see this need almost everywhere that you go. Drive through town, and what do you see? You can see graffiti. You see it in different places. And some of it's quite artistic. And some of it's very beautiful. And some of it's telling you who the person loves. In other places, it's telling you what gang the person's related to. And sometimes it's lewd. There's all kinds of different pieces of graffiti. And you know why this occurs? It's because you and I, as human beings, are made in God's image. And somehow we feel like we need to have some impact in life. And some people fulfill that need by shooting hundreds of rounds into other students at Virginia Tech. Others try to accumulate as much wealth as they can, and others try to make a name for themselves, or they make as much money as they can in this lifetime, or they strive to be a celebrity, a rock star, or a great model, or actress, or actor. And people are striving for all of these things. Donald Trump builds these great skyscrapers, and he puts his name on them and builds a monument to himself in this life. Mother Teresa goes around trying to comfort people as they die. And so others leave their mark teaching others. You leave your mark, don't you, John, on everybody that you teach in that class. And others leave a mark being a caring, nurturing mother or father teaching their children. You know, every one of us, you have to admit this, every one of us has marks on us that other people have left. Remember your mother packing your lunches? Remember that? Sometimes she put notes in them. How about the scraped knees and the bandages and the kisses to make it better? A father playing baseball with us, teaching us how to hit the ball, or taking us out to a park or fishing or amusement park. All of those memories, they're all a part of us. Everyone has a favorite teacher. I think I never would have learned fractions if it weren't for Mr. Smith, who somehow took an interest in me. And Mrs. Leader was so pretty, my first grade teacher, she inspired me to learn how to read. But I'll never forget those people because they left their mark. Haven't you got pieces of other people that live inside you? I know I do. Because sometimes people will say, you know, when I hear your sermons, Art, you sound just like so-and-so. Well, sure, I studied him. Other people have taught me, other ministers taught me how to study the Bible. And I do things the way they do. And sometimes I hear myself saying things the way I know a friend I used to know would say them. So hasn't someone, an old friend, left a lesson, an impression, a mark of love on you? You ever started a job and there was a workmate there who helped you get started and get through the early learning curve? Wasn't there someone that made life absolutely maddening? Sure there was. And they left their mark too. You know, it reminds me of an illustration. There was an advertisement that was for soap. And they had this kind of illustration of this little guy. And he was cleaning things up. And he kept looking intently at his shadow. And he had to admit, this is the one thing I can't wash clean. Can't get it out. But I say this. That illustration reminds me of the shadow each one of you leave on other people. You leave a mark. You leave by the shadow of your influence on them and the impressions that you give to them. And many of them never wash out. We will carry memories with us for all eternity. So I say this so that we realize, I preface this so that we understand that you and I, in even small ways, can make a big difference in people's lives. If we think about the mark we're leaving, it's worthwhile to consider. Many times you see the changes that other people have made because of something somebody did or something somebody said. It's an illustration in Soup for the Soul, Chicken Soup for the Soul, a story about Bill and Mike. And Mike was walking home from school one day, and he noticed a man or a boy walking in front of him with this huge load. He was carrying a big bag of stuff. Then he noticed Bill stumble and fall, and all of his stuff spilled out of the bag. And there was a bat and a mitt. There was some sweaters, some gym clothes, and a huge armful, a load of books that spilled out. So Mike hurried over there and helped him pick this stuff up and put it back in his bag. And he said, let me help you carry some of that. And so he did. And they went on to Bill's house. And Bill said, come on in for a Coke. And so they went in and they talked and they laughed and they played some computer games. You know, these guys were about 15 years old and they had a great time. Well, those boys didn't stay close friends, but they did stay in touch through junior high school and high school range. And it was about a week away from graduation. And Bill called Mike and he says, there's something I have to tell you. That day when you picked up my books, that day I had collected all my stuff. I was going home and I was going to end my life. Because he was troubled. His parents were always arguing. He was doing very poorly in school. And his girlfriend had broken up with him. And he didn't know what to do, so he was going to go home and end his life. And he told his friend, he said, "You don't realize it. I never told you this. The day you picked up those books, you saved my life. Because it was an act of compassion, and somebody cared. And so I decided not to do it. Because of that one thing." And how many times have people just said a word of encouragement to somebody else? How many times has somebody helped another person to, you understand, get over that first hump, like a little child that struggles to climb the stairs and they can't make it over the first step, but if you give them a little help, they can then crawl over and get up those stairs. And people are like that in life, in the walk that we have. Genesis 4, if you will. See, everyone leaves their mark. Everyone leaves it one way or another. Everyone leaves a mark, whether it's good or whether it's for evil. I want you to consider Satan for a moment. You ever look at some of the photos of the solar system? You see the incredible pockmarks on the moon where giant craters are miles deep. You look out into space and you see the rings of Saturn that they tell us were once moons and that they're shattered and pulverized into dust. Asteroids, pieces of planets flying all through the Earth. A war that took place between God and the devil. He left his mark, didn't he? And you see it everywhere. And then he now is the prince of the power of the air, and he broadcasts attitudes and thoughts and into people around the world, inspires leaders, causes them to go to war, causes abuses, so much suffering and so much tragedy. There is a being that made a decision to make a difference and to leave a mark. It was so tragic and so terrible. Adam and Eve had a choice to make, and they made their choice. And they left a mark on every one of us, didn't they? It's interesting that Cain, of course, killed a man. It was the first murder. And he left an example that somebody else followed. Genesis 4 and verse 23. Genesis 4 and verse 23. "And Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, 'Hear my voice, you wives of Lamech. Hearken unto my speech, for I've slain a man to my wounding and a young man to my hurt. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, Lamech 70 and sevenfold.'" And so you see this example. Once somebody does something, it's a lot easier for others to do it, isn't it? And what happens? You know, when I saw this terrible tragedy at Virginia Tech, somebody asked me, "What'd you think about that?" You know what I thought? Somebody's watching that and they're saying in their mind, "I can beat that. I can beat that number." Because we're just so nuts today. So once we do something, it prepares a way for others to do it too. Reverse that. Can't you see in the world to come that it'll be the example of so many doing what's right to lead others to do what's right as well? Then there was Abraham. Let's go over there, Genesis 18. Genesis 18. Abraham was a wonderful example. But he left that example in his children. Genesis 18 and verse 17. God says that he's going to fulfill the promise that he made to Abraham. And he says this, "Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him." And then God says this, "I know him, that he'll command his children and his household after him, and they'll keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham." That's what he has spoken of him. See that? The power of a parent over a child is phenomenal. Just phenomenal. 1 Corinthians 11. Moses, too, was a great servant of God. Imagine him leading all those people in Israel. And he, like Abraham, became their hero. Thousands of years later, they still are writing books, they're making movies, and writing articles, aren't they, about this man, Moses. Amazing. I want you for a minute to consider the Apostle Paul. Amazingly, the man was shipwrecked, thrown in lion's den, beaten, stoned, left for dead, and he did it all for the glory of God, and he left his mark. And he's an example for us. It says this in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, "Be you followers of me, even as I also am of Christ." Consider, too, a beast ruling the world and enforcing a mark on everybody to show they belong to him. It's amazing to even think about it, but it's to be in the forehead and in the hand, which I understand to be picture what a person thinks about and what they do with their strength. And I think the entire world, if you can, has been colored by a mark, because remember in Daniel, those nations from the image were portrayed as what? Beasts. And so down through the ages, they have left their mark, and we today are Greek, aren't we? We're Greek and we're Roman in our architecture, in a lot of our religious thoughts. We are just reflecting so much of what went before us. And then consider God's mark, if you will, Deuteronomy 6. God wants us to be marked. In verse 5, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." And then he says this profound statement, "You shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes." And so God wants us to think about his law, and he wants us to talk about it, and he wants us to do it over and over and over again. Why? So that it will indelibly be burned into our mind, into our hearts. I'm going to have to get a different kind of paper that slides. God puts his mark on us to burn it into our memory. And I want you to think about this for a moment. The Creator emptied himself of his beauty, his power, emptied himself of his majesty, all that he was, the status that he had sitting on that throne we see in Revelation, emptied himself of that, came down here and became human like you and me, with the same kind of flesh, the same kind of pulls that the flesh has, came to this earth and lived a perfect life, and he had no friends, no lovers. He couldn't give himself to anyone because he knew what was in man. They'd try to use him, as they did in several cases. He allowed himself to be subject to diabolical men, and they treated him so disrespectfully, spitting on him, beating him, and treating him the way they did. They arrested him, tied him up, and then the next day, they had a professional lictor beat him with a whip that would rip the skin from his back and from his sides so badly that he could see his ribs showing, as it says in the Psalms. And then he was crucified, and they nailed him to that stake, and then they dropped it into the ground, and it just, with a thud, you can imagine the shudder of pain that went through him. And then for hours he would try to stand on the nail to raise up to be able to breathe, and it would just, it'd be excruciating. And then finally he was speared, finally he died and gave his life for all of us. The Creator gave his life for the creation, but he left a mark, didn't he, by what he did. And that mark, he changed history, all of human history. And not only did he begin the change then, when he returns, he's going to change it in such phenomenal ways the world would never even recognize the kind of world it's going to be. And that being called you. And he called you for a purpose. And it was to follow his example, wasn't it? Yes. We're called to follow that example and leave a mark in life. Let's go to Matthew 5. Matthew 5. You and I. Amazing as it seems, as undeserving as we are, we've been called for this purpose. In verse 13 of chapter 5, Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It's not good for anything but to be cast out and be trodden under foot of men." And then he says this, "You're the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. And neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and they give light to all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." This is what he wants us to do. This is what he wants us to do with our life. This is what he wants the dash to look like. His light shining through us to others in the world. And we're called for this purpose, to imitate Jesus Christ, to allow him to live in us, to walk by that Spirit, to serve others, to give to the needy. And each one of us is to be a witness of one, to preach the gospel to the world, to do that at work, and to do it at school, and to do it at home. See, you actually preach the gospel. Oh yeah, we do a little TV program. We have a tiny audience, get a few responses. But the truth is, your preaching of the gospel is far more important than I think the work we do on a television program. I mean that. There's a little poem that kind of, I think, illustrates this, and it says this. "You are writing a gospel, a chapter a day, by deeds that you do and by words that you say. Men read what you write, whether faithless or true. Say, what is the gospel according to you?" Did you get my message? We're to be living the way the kingdom of God is to be lived. Living by the laws of God, living by the way of God, the love of God. And people are to see that, and they're to be able to tell the difference. Go to 1 Corinthians 12, if you will. So we're not doing our good works to show off. We're not doing good works and trying to live the way of God so that we bring accolades to ourselves or attention to ourselves. The point is to quietly live God's way. And that's why he said, don't do your alms before men. Don't blow a trumpet in the marketplace. So what we want to do is be invisibly in one sense, not drawing attention to ourselves, but on the other hand, living God's way consistently so that we can reflect that to the world. So we're to live his way, and we're going to be noticed whether we want to or not. Perhaps you haven't made this connection before, but I want to today. See, God's mark is on us, as it says in, I think, three places, at least two I think of off the top of my head, regarding Passover and after he gave the law in Deuteronomy 5, and in Deuteronomy 6, he says that it is to be in our forehead and our right hand. And so the thing is about this, is it's interesting we wear God's mark, and it's about keeping his law. And we know the mark is expressed or demonstrated publicly by the Sabbath and so on, right? We understand that. But it's about keeping his law. That's why he said these words, speaking of the Ten Commandments, are to be here and be here. But isn't it interesting what sin is? Because it's often defined as what? Missing the mark. And the mark is the path. The mark is the path of obedience to God. But there's more than that, isn't there? 1 Corinthians 12, more than just keeping God's law. That we're to leave a good taste in the mouths of other people. That is, we're to be a people who serve and give to others the way God has to us. And to that end, God has given us various gifts. 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 4. "Now there are diversities of the gifts, but the same Spirit," it says, differences of administration, but the same Lord. There are diversities of operations, but it's the same God that works in all. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man and every woman to profit. For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing, to another the working of miracles, and another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, and to another diverse kinds of tongues, and to another the interpretation of those tongues. But all of these work that one and self-same Spirit, dividing to every man severally as God wills. So we have been given gifts. You all have gifts. And so some have been given wisdom. Haven't you seen people that can sometimes, they can just get right to the core of issues? They can zero right in, and they're just such good counselors because they have that kind of wisdom. If you have that trait, do you share it? Do you share it with others and spread it around and help others with your wisdom? You know, I've met people that are walking encyclopedias. They just have so much knowledge. You know, Nathan is a kid. He's just a young guy. He's with the United Church of God. But, you know, we call him whenever we have questions because this fellow is so smart. He has so much knowledge. And so he corrects us in a number of cases. And so we always kind of check things and run them by him before we publish because of the knowledge that he has. And we consult him often. So have you ever been at work and seen people withhold knowledge? It's like job security. They don't want anyone to know how their job is done, right? Well, we can't be a people like that. If God has given the gift that we can remember stuff, which I can't, if he's given us that gift, shouldn't we share it and give to others? Sure, openly, easily, yes. And how about people filled with faith? I mean, aren't they wonderful when you're kind of down? People are just so confident and so upbeat and positive, and they can encourage you and give of themselves in that way. Yes, all of these different gifts, healing, some seem to have more of a gift of healing than others, and there will be a time again when we will be working miracles. I'm sure of it in the end time. It says so. And there's people who can discern spirits and attitudes. They really can. I know sometimes wives are actually better at that than husbands in many cases. They can tell where somebody's coming from. You know, they can tell what their motives are. And they have these kinds of gifts. So whatever gift God has given you, my question today is, do you use it? And do you use it to help other people? I mean, think about it for a minute. Warmth? Compassion? Mercy? Hey, do you have a sense of humor? Are you good at mechanical things? Can you cook good? Are you a good listener? You understand my point? You have a gift. You have a number of gifts. Use it. Give it. Leave your mark. Ephesians 6, if you will. Parents, have you ever considered how we leave a mark on our children? Our children are like a clean canvas to us in one sense, and as they go through life, every person that passes by them, I think, leaves a stroke on that canvas. And I think there's two things that God says about the children that I think are very important. You know, sometimes we can give our children so many rules that we expect them to act like little adults. And sometimes we can kind of steal their childhood away by not letting them have fun sometimes. And we can be too strict and too harsh. And by so doing, we can cause them to be angry. And God mentions this here in Ephesians 6 in verse 4. Where it says, you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. So there's a place for fathering where we nurture and not only discipline. And what happens to me is there's so many kids out there that are filled with anger. They're filled with a rage and hostility. And they see the hypocrisy, they strike out in anger, and sometimes they damage things, and sometimes they damage other people. But then there's a flip side to this. Some will keep the rage inside, and they fear to strike out. And that's over in Colossians 3. Let's address that for a moment. Colossians 3. So you can make your child angry and bitter, or you can cause them to be depressed and discouraged. When they hold it in and don't express it, then they become very depressed and discouraged. Colossians 3 and verse 21 says this, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." And so we have this enormous influence on our children. And if there's one thing I know in the years that I have spent on this earth, in the years I've spent in the Church of God, I will say this, we need to discipline our children. But you know what we need to do is love them. We need to love them and love them and love them and love them and do things with them and work side by side with them and bond with them. That's what we need to do with them. Nurture those children. Give them the attaboys. Give them the attagirls. It's amazing, as a parent, we have the ability to mold another human being and leave our mark in them. Anyway, I didn't get the letter. Mrs. Fisher got the letter from her daughter. And she was reading it to me on the way here, and I thought, boy, I'm going to read this, because you don't want to be too easy on the kids. Here's a tribute to mean moms. Someday when our children are old enough to understand the logic that motivates a parent, I'll tell them, as my mean mom told me, I love you enough. I loved you enough to ask where you were going, with whom, and what time you'd be home. I loved you enough to be silent and let you discover that your new best friend was a creep. I loved you enough to stand over you for 2 hours while you cleaned your room, a job that should have taken 15 minutes. I loved you enough to see your anger, disappointment, and tears in my eyes. You got to see it. Children must learn that their parents aren't perfect. I loved you enough to let you assume the responsibility for your actions, even when the penalties were so harsh they almost broke my heart. Most of all, I loved you enough to say no when I knew you'd hate me for it. Those were the most difficult battles of all. I'm glad I won them, because in the end, you won too. And someday when your children are old enough to understand the logic that motivates parents, you'll tell them, was your mom mean? I know mine was. We had the meanest mother in the whole world. While other kids ate candy for breakfast, we had to have cereal, eggs, and toast. When others had a Pepsi and a Twinkie for lunch, we had to eat sandwiches. You can guess our mother fixed us dinner that was different from what the other kids had, too. Mother insisted on knowing where we were at all times. You'd think we were convicts in prison. She had to know who our friends were and what we were doing with them, and she insisted that if we would be gone for an hour, that we had to be gone for an hour or less. We were ashamed to admit it, but she had the nerve to break the child labor laws by making us work. We had to wash the dishes, make the beds, learn to cook, vacuum the floor, do laundry, empty the trash, and all sorts of cruel jobs. I think she would lie awake at night thinking of more things for us to do. She always insisted on us telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. By the time we were teenagers, she could read our minds and had eyes in the back of her head. Then life was really tough. Mother wouldn't let our friends just honk the horn when they drove up. They had to come to the door so she could meet them. And while everyone else could date when they were 12 or 13, we had to wait until we were 16. Because our mother was the way she was, we missed out on lots of things other kids experienced. None of us have ever been caught shoplifting, vandalizing others' property, or ever arrested for a crime. And it's all her fault. Now that we've left home, we're all educated, honest adults. We're doing our best to be mean parents, just like Mom was. I think that's what's wrong with the world today. It just doesn't have enough mean moms. That's kind of cute, but boy, there's a lot of truth in that. A lot of it. And the point I make, you leave your mark. You leave your mark. I want us to think about leaving the mark and what kind of mark we leave. You know, we leave our mark on our mates, too. And sometimes those marks can be cuts. Sometimes they can be scars. And I want to reiterate today, no one's more important. No one's more loyal. No one should be more cherished. No one should be more respected than our mates. You know what God says about this. Husband, love your wives. So why don't we? Why don't we work at making them feel cherished? Why don't we do that? Why don't we give to them what they really need from us? It's irresistible. And wives, I know every book, every movie, every magazine's telling you that you shouldn't respect men. And there's probably some reason to that. But God tells us to do it, doesn't He? You know, years ago I learned that everyone has attributes that are beautiful. But I also say this, everybody has attributes that are admirable. Every man has parts of him that are respectable, that should be honored. And so in marriage, why not give our men what it is they need? Because that's what God designed them that way. They need to be looked up to and respected. I say this, practice for the kingdom when we'll be serving Jesus Christ and honoring Him. Show respect and honor to your husband. Listen to him. Don't fight and argue. Work together and fulfill one another. Give each other what their needs are. I know it makes you feel vulnerable, doesn't it, whether you're a man or a woman. You give the other one their needs, and then what about you? Give yourself to the other person. You can change the relationships forever and make them so much better. You can leave a mark on your mate, and it's not a cut, and it's not painful. Ephesians 6, if you will. Back to Ephesians 6. There's work. To me, there's such a wrong attitude in corporate America today. Everyone seems to hate work. They hate their job, and it's so wrong. You know, Jesus said, I work, and my Father works. And look at how we're designed. When you look at our bodies and you look at our minds, we're designed to create, aren't we? Designed to plan and bring a plan to execution. We are designed to work. Ephesians 6 and verse 5 says this, servants, that is, we could look at this as employees today, be obedient to them that are your masters, according to the flesh with fear and trembling, as singleness of heart as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will, doing service as to the Lord and not to men. Man, that makes a job, whether you're sweeping a floor or cleaning an apartment or painting or whatever you're doing, that gives you God-like powers. Can you see it? It makes it meaningful, one. But number two, we're able to plan and execute and create, and it gives us purpose. Here's my view on this, honestly, and I ask you to think about this. You know what work is? Grown-up play. That's what it is. We should really put ourselves into your job. The more you put yourself into it, the more you'll really enjoy it. And if we will strive to really do the very best we can, we'll leave a mark. And if we'll be positive and encouraging to other workmates, we can make a difference. Viktor Frankl turned a whole concentration camp around. We can change a department by our attitude. We'll leave a mark that's a mark from God. Speaking of Mark, let's go to Mark 8 and we'll finish up here. The world we live in today, and it's just everyone trying to get all they can for themselves. That's what the world's about. But we're called a people to give of ourselves, to give what we can give. And we're not to get caught up in this world and its values and its standards, the materialism, the pride, the lust, the vanity, all of that that's out there, we're not to get involved in. Again, Trump builds a building and puts his name on it. But there's a time coming when that building's going to be nothing but rubble. But I say this, the mark you leave is going to stay. It won't be washed out. The mark you leave, what you're building holy and righteous character. Everyone ends up the same. A dash on a headstone on a grave. And we should consider our end. We should think about the hereafter and consider it. What kind of mark are we going to leave? Emperor Charlemagne was a very powerful man, and I think there's an illustration about him that puts these things in perspective. In 771, he became the ruler of the entire Frankish kingdom, and he wanted to rebuild the Roman Empire, and so the next year he launched a 30-year campaign, military campaign, and he was able to restore much of the greatness of the Roman Empire, and they say that he's the one that actually paved the way for the development of modern Europe. That said, I read a story about a couple hundred years back or so where they actually dug up his tomb and they opened it. And what the workers saw, they said, was startling because he was in a sitting position and he had these beautiful, regal, incredible clothes and he had a scepter in one hand, but on his knee as he sat, he had a Bible, and he had a finger, long, bony, skeletal finger, pointing to Mark 8 in verse 36, where it says this, "For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" What a powerful, powerful truth. So it's good for us to think about the hereafter, think of the dash to leave a mark in life. But you see, our mark isn't that little dash, is it? It really isn't. We're going to leave, by the way we live, marks on other people's lives. We're going to color the people that know us and that interact with us. We're going to color them with God's way. And so I ask you today to consider this thought. Let's think about the kind of mark we leave. Let's think about it as we live each day of our lives. And let's not just leave any mark as we drift through life without a rudder, but let's be convicted and devoted to living God's way so that we don't leave dirty smudges and cuts and scars on other people. Let's make an effort to let the light of God shine in our lives and leave a mark of love. Leave your mark for the master.